Okay. So first thing, the thing I wanted right at the onset that this talk will be almost completely speculative. Okay, so you should take everything I say with a kind of a large grain of salt. So the theme of the talk, though, is the following, that there are many phenomena in analytic, many interesting phenomena in analytic number theory, that is, some questions in number theory where a parameter is going to infinity, which can be modeled by statistics related to various observables of statistics of random permutations of a large finite set. Okay, we know a lot about random permutations, but in general, they may not be drawn from the full symmetric group, but possibly drawn from some subgroup, or some family of subgroups of the full symmetric group. Okay, so that's kind of theme of talk. So, yeah, as I said, this is all kind of it's all speculative. What I say, there will be in it. You can get from it some heuristics which are numerically testable, and I've tested a couple, not all. So I'm not sure they'll all work out. To the extent that they're valid, I think it's very interesting because they suggest some kind of algebraic structures which we don't understand. So this is all part of a joint project. It's a kind of offshoot of a joint project with Jordan Ellenberg, and I'll be talking on Thursday at Toronto about the kind of main branch of that project. This is a side. Okay, so let me just give you an example of a couple of phenomena which, so just to say that they're very, very visible in some way. So let's take, for example, P of n, which is the partition function. That means the number of ways you can write n as a sum of smaller integers. Okay, so for example, P of 4 is 5 because you can write 4 as 4 or 3 plus 1 or 2 plus 2 and so on. Now, there's an interesting thing about this, which is that if you fix some prime, well, it doesn't have to be prime, if you fix essentially any number L, okay, let's say prime bigger than or equal to 5, then P of n mod L, so P of n doesn't take all values mod L equally often. Okay? P of n is unusually often divisible by L. Okay, so for example, if L is 13, this is not my observation. There's a paper where, in massive computation where they computed the first 10 to the 9 values, and you see that it's divisible by 13 about 3% more than you expect, something like that. Okay, now there are some kind of not quite obvious, there are some more evident reasons why this is true. For example, it satisfies certain congruences. But there are, even after you eliminate these reasons, there's still kind of an excess which you don't understand. Now, this is not just, there are other functions which have similar property. For example, so if f, so let's throughout our talk, f will be a polynomial in some number of variables, let's say in k variables and r sub f of n will be the number of x in zk for which f of x is equal to n. Now, again, for various classes of f, you can notice a similar discrepancy. For example, if f is a quadratic form in three variables, or in fact any odd number of variables, so this is just an example. For example, if f is a quadratic in three variables, you will again notice that this number, r f of n, if you fix a prime L, is unusually often divisible. Okay, r f is unusually often divisible by any fixed prime L. Now, this number is the size of a certain set, and there are some kind of evident reasons why it might be true, but even after you eliminate those, you will see there's an excess of divisibility. As I said, it's sometimes quite small, but okay. So, sorry? Numerical evidence. Numerical evidence. So if you go up to 10 to the 9, it's not standard deviation, right? So this is the 3% they've computed the values up to billion. So it's not, and in this case, it's absolute. I mean, okay, it's not. But all right. So these are examples of things which will be related to something I'm going to talk about. So I want to start off with something which people may have seen before. I'll sort of alternate between giving explicit examples and some kind of general ramblings. So the first thing I want to talk about is random matrices. And so they'll be both over the complex numbers, and then also later we'll talk about random matrices over finite fields. So there's a... So we have the Riemann zeta function, and it has some zeros, which we believe to be all on the line. The real part of S is equal to 1/2. Okay, so it was a kind of wonderful observation of Montgomery that if you look at these zeros, and you do have to go quite far to see this, but they're not distributed like a random, like a bunch of random numbers. For example, they are not very close to each other as often as you would expect. Okay? So they tend to repel each other. And Montgomery's observation was that these TJs have the same distribution, as in a sense which as the eigenvalues of a random matrix chosen with respect to Haar measure from a large unitary group. Okay, so the eigenvalues of random matrices are another object that display a kind of repulsion property. By the way, throughout my talk, n will always be some kind of very big number. So this means in the limit as n goes to infinity. Okay, so this philosophy or this idea was kind of generalized by Katz and Sarnak. Is not what's now called the Katz-Sarnak philosophy, in that they showed that other families of L functions. So if you replace here zeta by other L functions, and again I'm not going to make this very precise, but they observe this is quite a universal phenomenon. So other L functions have zeros, and those zeros are apparently always modeled by the eigenvalues of random matrices. Not always chosen from the unitary group, but from some large matrix groups. Okay, so from either, it's always modeled either by a large unitary group, or a large orthogonal group, or a large symplectic group. So one of the nice things about this is it explained certain, kind of classified L functions or families of L functions into sort of classes depending on which. And you saw to some extent that L functions which had corresponded to the same group had similar behavior in many ways. Okay, anyway, so this talk is meant to be about finite groups. So you can ask, is there some phenomenon on the left-hand side which would be related to eigenvalues of the same thing, but over matrix groups, say, over a finite field, so you get a finite group. So let's say, is there some phenomenon in number theory which is modeled by eigenvalues, say, of large matrices over... So, okay, again, in my talk, L is some fixed, whatever your favorite prime number is. It's some fixed prime, like 3 or 5 or whatever. Okay, and the answer, I think it's certainly yes, although it for some reason was not enunciated. So these objects have an analog which should be modeled, which is, so to speak, zeta or L functions mod L. Okay, so I have to explain what this means. So the Riemann zeta function is a priori kind of a transcendental object, but it does have a kind of arithmetic nature in that, for example, the zeta function at an even integer is pi to the 2k times some rational number. Okay? So, at some point, it kind of makes sense to say that zeta mod 3 is 0 if you interpret it as saying this rational number here is divisible by 3. Okay? And then, so what seems to be, so is that how often this happens, I'll give you a precise conjecture in a second, how often that type of thing happens will be related to statistics, questions about how often matrices over Z mod LZ have specified eigenvalues. Okay, so let me give you a precise heuristic along those lines. You can't just, though you could say, is the probability that this is divisible by 3, this rational number is divisible by 3 for, if you vary K, does that have a meaning? But this is kind of periodic, if you vary K. But that's not a good thing to do. So let me give you an example of a heuristic along these lines. So I need to, okay, so let chi be a quadratic character, a quadratic Dirichlet character. So in fact, this will not be important at all in the rest of my talk, but I just want to make a precise statement along these lines just so you can see that it's, again, kind of interesting and numerically testable. So chi is a quadratic Dirichlet character. What this means is it's a character from the group of integers mod d to plus or minus 1 for some d, okay? And then we can define L of the corresponding L function as the Riemann zeta function, but you put in some signs. Okay, so now, suppose we, so there's kind of an analog of this property here, namely if chi of minus 1 is 1, then L at any even number, so yeah, exactly the same thing. L of 2k chi belongs to pi to the 2k times, well, square root d. There's another factor of square root d. If chi of minus 1 is minus 1, then L of 2k plus 1 chi belongs to pi 2k plus 1 square root d. That's Q. Okay, so this, for example, this second thing is something which, in a special case, everyone will know. In a special case, it says 1 minus a third plus a fifth minus a seventh and so on is equal to pi over 4. Okay, so that's the case when k is 0 and chi is a character mod 4. Okay, so where's the heuristic? So an example of this philosophy would be if you fix some integer k and fix L, then the probability that L divides the... Well, okay, let's say we're in this first case here, L of 2k chi should converge to, the probability, what does it mean? The fraction of chi. So you take a whole bunch of quadratic characters and, k and L, the fraction of chi. So that L divides this, what does that mean? It means that it divides the algebraic part of it. Okay, so you just remove the pi to the 2k's and the square root d's. This should be, so this is totally heuristic, the number rho where rho is the probability, the fraction of matrices in GLN Z mod LZ. Alright, so you see, when you're asking that L divide L of 2k chi, it's kind of like asking that this L function mod L is 0. So it's like it's like the above pictures, but it's a mod L version. Correspondingly, you might expect it to be related to eigenvalues mod L. And so if you let rho to be this fraction of matrices which have an eigenvalue, which have 1 as an eigenvalue. Okay, it turns out this has a limit as n goes to infinity, okay? And that limit is 1 minus the product I bigger than or equal to 1, 1 minus 1 over L to the I. Okay, so explicitly it's something like 1 over L plus 1 over L squared plus some higher order terms. In particular, it's slightly higher than 1 over L. Okay, a randomly chosen matrix mod L doesn't have 1 as an eigenvalue times 1 over L. It's slightly higher than 1 over L. Okay, so this is a... Here, 6 seem to be okay when I look for some small values of k, but I didn't test very far. One case of this, however, is very well known and very famous. So at the point k for the values of l at 1, for the value of l at the point 1, this heuristic goes by a different name. It's called the Cohen. This was conjectured when this is 1 by Cohen and Lenstra. But they arrived at this number rho. They had a completely different derivation and interpretation of the number rho. So just let me say, because it's very nice, their interpretation of the number rho is it's that the probability that a random abelian group has order not divisible by L. Okay, but they put a measure on isomorphism classes of finite abelian groups so they can make sense of that. Okay, so now this is an example, I want to see this as part of a much broader picture. So the first thing is I want to think of this not as being about matrices and eigenvalues, but as about permutation groups. Okay, so I'll just make a kind of stupid observation about that, is that, in a sense I'm saying that the right version of this statement is, so note that a matrix in GLN Z1 LZ has 1 as an eigenvalue. Okay, so this kind of makes this makes sense from the perspective of what I said, but there's another way to think of it, a matrix, let's call it A, if and only if an eigenvalue of 1 means that it fixes a vector. Okay, so if and only if A fixes some element of Z mod LZ to the n, subtract 0. Okay, so rather than think of this as probably the matrix has an eigenvalue, you can think of it like this. Think of permutations of this set that happen to be given by linear transformations, then it's a chance that one of them has a fixed point. Okay? And in that form, it's much more generalizable. Okay, so I wanted to kind of take this perspective. Okay. Yeah. Any questions? Okay, so now I want to... So the next thing I want to do is kind of give you a very some kind of reason why you might expect something like that to be true. Okay, and in fact, this will fit into the picture I'm about to say. It's not exactly, it's a kind of reason by analogy. So second thing I have to explain is the analogy between integers and, well, function fields. So, oh yes, one thing I wanted to say. So as far as this random matrix theory of the zeta function goes, in the sense of Montgomery and... Okay. So there's one thing. So as far as random matrix theory of the zeta function goes, about zeros of the zeta function, that's kind of a subtle thing which you observe only in the asymptotic distribution of prime numbers, but these kind of zeta functions mod L, the things related to algebraic properties of zeta functions actually show up a lot more in number theory in kind of very explicit ways. It's not so well advertised because it takes a long time to say what an L function is. But so for example, both of the things I wrote up here, the partition function mod L, at least for various small L's, and this thing mod L, are both, you can express them in terms of various L functions mod L. So, I mean, I haven't sat down and done this, but I expect that you can explain these discrepancies in terms of the sort of excess, the fact that random matrices mod L have kind of a slightly higher chance of having 1 as an eigenvalue than 1 over L. Okay, so there are some explicit formulas due to Walsh-Bourget and others which relate these quantities to the kind of object I was just talking about. Okay, so second thing I want to talk about is function fields. So there's kind of a very interesting and probably very deep analogy between the ring of integers on one hand and the ring of polynomials in one variable over a finite field. Okay, so this Analogy is very important in kind of algebraic number theory. It's also interesting in analytic number theory, and that's kind of what my project with Jordan has been about for the last few years. But okay, so let me just give you an explicit example of what happens when we pass a problem. So all this is, you take an integer, take some problem about integers, and then you can usually rephrase it, replacing the notion of integer by polynomial over FP. So let's take such a problem. Let's look at this quantity R x squared plus y squared of n. So what that means is number of ways of writing an integer n as a sum of two squares. Okay, so now what happens over here is that n becomes a polynomial. Okay, and x and y both become polynomials. So everything is over the finite field with x psi, so they become some polynomials. And this equation, x squared plus y squared, so you're counting the number of solutions to sum of x I t to the I squared. I haven't said what kind of question we're going to ask about this, but you'll see it's something that's quite a simple and general observation to be made. Okay, so n is some polynomial. So what this really is some system. It's a system of several polynomial, system of quadratic equations. In these variables xi and yi, okay, which are all valued in FP. Yes? It might be a good idea to limit the degree, let's limit the degree. Probably a very good idea to limit the degree. I'm just going to make a kind of general observation in a second. So there are many things, there are many quantities in many sort of questions in number theory, which give you some number, over FP. So what is this in particular? It's the number of FP points on some variety, maybe variety V, which depends on N. Okay, that's just it's a set of FP solutions to some system of polynomial equations. Okay, in fact, if you look at it, the number of equations will actually be the same as the number of unknowns. Okay, so in fact, this variety will have dimension zero, but it doesn't really, that's not so bad. So there are many other problems. Some problems will, over a function field, look of this nature, and other problems will not. Okay, so for example, if you take something like the problem I was just talking about, like the highest power, if you, just related to what I was saying before, the highest power of some fixed prime L, which dividing these algebraic parts of L functions, you can interpret this, again, as the number of FP points on some. Now, I'm not saying this interpretation does anything for you, but you can, on this side, the question becomes one about the number of FP points on some variety, which depends on K and chi. Other problems over the integers are not of algebraic enough nature that this is true. If you ask a question about, for example, arithmetic progressions in primes, this analogy is not so helpful. And it's just, the question is interesting here, but it's just not of algebraic nature. Okay, now, I only want to make, there's just one amazing thing, though, which happens on the right-hand side, which a priori you cannot see on the left-hand side, which is this. So if you have a, so if we have a variety, given some variety, some system of polynomial equations over FP, so then the set of solutions, you can extract its set of solutions over FP as being the fixed points, V of FP is the fixed points of the Frobenius map. So I'll just remind you what that is, of the Frobenius. So the Frobenius map is the map which in coordinates raises every coordinate to the pth power. Okay, so V is a system of polynomial equations for some variables. You just raise everything to the pth power. And because this is an automorphism of the field, it preserves any equations they satisfy. It's the set of fixed points of this map on V of FP bar. Okay? Okay, now in general, V of FP bar, okay, that is the FP bar here is the algebraic closure, is a chosen algebraic closure. And, okay, this will in general be infinite, but if the number of equations and unknowns defining V are the same. That is, if the dimension of V is 0, this will be some big finite set. Okay? So if the dimension of V is 0, then this will actually be, in a natural way, the fixed point, the set of, if you have a variety of dimensions 0, which sounds like a kind of stupid thing, but it just means you have as many equations as unknowns. It could be usually an enormous number of variables. The solutions over FP are, in some kind of natural way, the fixed points of a permutation of a finite finite set. Okay, now that permutation, in general, it may be the geometry of the situation may constrain this. So the geometry of whatever situation you have at hand may constrain the permutation not to be random, but to lie in some subgroup of, may constrain the permutation to lie in a subgroup, not in the full symmetric group of this big, in some subgroup of the full symmetric group. Okay, and in general, for example, you know, if you have some kind of group structures lying around, you can imagine this is a group, and maybe this should act by homomorphisms on that group. Okay, so there are some, fine. Actually, yeah. Is this readable? I can barely read it. Okay, anyway, so our hope, and as I said, this is something which needs to be tested much more, is that you can still see a shadow of this structure on the number theory side. That is, given a question, so here's kind of a general hope, although maybe, again, speculation is closer. Given a question over the integers, which when you think of it over FP of T, becomes about a family of zero-dimensional varieties. And over FP of T, then the answer to this question will see in some way the statistics of random permutations. Okay, and as I said, this condition that the dimension of zero-dimensional variety is by no means kind of crippling. So I already showed you kind of an explicit example. Now, as I said, there's basically no case where we can prove this, but there are many instances where you can kind of see shadows of the structure, even though we don't have over integers for BNF or DIF. Nonetheless, at least statistically, it behaves as if it were there, and that this kind of seems extremely interesting to see if you can construct what the analog of this structure would be. Okay, any questions? Yeah. 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 Okay, make it monic or something. Okay. Yeah. It's a modulo some symmetries. It's yeah. Okay. So where are we? Okay. So let me now make some two brief general comments about statistics of. So in particular, what should be relevant, what we might hope to see, is things related to the number of the statistics of fixed points. So I'll just make two general comments about that, and then I'll give you another example in number theory. A remark. Suppose that G is a subgroup of the permutations of 1 to n, and for G, for an element G, let's write fix of G to be the number of I in 1 to n. The number of I which are fixed. Okay, number of fixed points. Okay. So the first general observation is that it's very simple to compute the expectation of this, right? That is the average of this quantity over G. Okay? And the reason is this, if you take a random element, if you take an element from 1 to n, for a second, imagine that we're dealing with the full permutation group. If you take an element from 1 to n, it's fixed with probability 1 over n. Okay? And there are n elements, so the expectation is 1. Right? Now, in general, if you just replicate that reasoning, you see that works as long as G is transitive, and in general, this expectation will be the number of number of orbits of G. Of G on 1 to n. Okay. Now, this is a very useful observation because at the same time, it also determines all the moments of this. Okay, so, for example, fix of G to the K for any K is the number of orbits of G on k tuples. Okay, so all the moments are integers, but in this way you determine the whole distribution of the variable. The second comment is that when G is the full symmetric group, then again it's easy to explicitly determine what this is. The probability that the number of fixed points is exactly equal to T will approach as n goes to infinity as a simple exercise, 1 over T factorial times 1 over E. So it's a Poisson distribution. Okay, in fact, it's the only group for which you get a Poisson distribution. If you have any subgroup besides the alternating group, the distribution of fixed points will differ substantially from this. I'll come back to that point. Okay. All right, so now I want to give a second example of number theory, which is, again, certainly not due to me. It's sort of surprisingly rather little known. I think it deserves to be much better known, and that's integer factorization. Okay, so I said already... So the question I'm going to... Well, in fact, you would have seen, just like for x squared plus y squared, if you did the same thing for x times y, you would have again gotten a zero-dimensional variety. So you might expect that things related to the equation x times y is n might see the statistics of some permutation group. And this is kind of it's amazing that this is true. I don't know exactly... I'm going to attribute what follows to Billingsley, but I don't know exactly. All right, so here's the theorem is this, that the factorization of a random integer has the same distribution as the cycle structure of a random permutation. Okay, so, I mean, Billingsley certainly worked out some part of this. So let's take some big integer x, and let's take n in the region x to 2x at random. Okay, so x is very big. You take n at random, and now we factorize n into prime factors. Okay, and you're allowed multiplicity, but you just order them like this. Okay, and you want to know how they're distributed. For example, you might want to know how likely is it that the largest prime factor is bigger than the square root of n. Okay, that's a question. Okay, so the theorem is this. I'll state it in an imprecise form, then I'll tell you some things which are exactly true and some things which are... Okay, so the distribution of the vector, of the vector log pi over log n. So let's just write down all these numbers. So this is a vector of numbers which add up to 1, okay, is the same as the distribution of the vector of numbers ki, let's write it like this, li of sigma over k, okay, where sigma is drawn, li sigma over n, sigma is drawn at random from the symmetric group on n letters, li of sigma are the cycle lengths, ordered in decreasing order, okay, so these guys also all add up to n, and if you want agreement to be very nice, I mean, many things about this are true asymptotically, but to get things to be very nice, you should take n to be about log x. Okay, so now I will give you some precise senses in which the statement is true. It's not true in all senses, but it is true in many. So, question? So, yeah, I asked Virchik. So you see this in an old paper of Virchik, and Virchik told me Billingsley, but I don't know the... But actually, how do you prove this? The point is that both of these things are equal to some other thing which is very easy to describe, and that's what's called the stick-breaking process. So you take a rod of length 1, and then you break it at a random point. Then you take what's left and you break it at a random point. Then you take what's left and break it at a random point. Each time the random point is uniformly distributed. And then both of the that gives you a distribution on sequences with some one, which is easy to see, sort of, it's easy to check these are equal by showing they're both equal to that. But let me tell you some precise statements. For example, the probability that, for example, the largest prime factor divided by log n is bigger than alpha, and the probability that log of L1 over log of n are bigger than alpha, these converge to the same limit, okay, as either capital X goes to infinity and capital N goes to infinity, and that limit is some explicit function of alpha called the Dickman function, but it's the same in both cases. Okay? So that's one end, and in a sense, that's kind of the less surprising end. What's kind of more surprising is this also kind of predicts things correctly about, say, the... So let's call mu the number of prime factors of n, and mu prime the number of cycles of sigma, then the probability that mu is 1 is the probability that n is prime, which is about 1 over log x, and the probability that mu prime is 1 is the probability that a permutation on k on n elements is a cycle, so there are, well, n minus 1 factorial cycles, so the probability is 1 over n. So I told you should choose n equals log x for the... So these match up. Not only that, if you replace 1 by any fixed integer, they would continue to match up. Okay, if you take the expectation value of 2 to the nu, that's kind of the number of divisors of an integer. So for an integer of size x, that's about log x. If you take the expectation of 2 to the nu prime, so again, this is something you can... So how should we evaluate 2 to the number of cycles? It counts the number of unions of cycles. And a union of cycles is a subset which is stable under your permutation. So this is the expected, it's the number of orbits of Sn on subsets, so which is equal to n, or n plus 1 if you... Okay, so again these match up. Now, one thing just to, but I should note first, is that if you take, for example, the moment, the expectation of 4 to the nu and 4 to the nu prime, so these both are, one is asymptotic to log x cubed, the other is asymptotic to n cubed, but the constants don't match. Okay? So, I don't think that's a disaster. If you go back to the random matrix models of zeta functions, and you, one thing that they kind of accept is that you can have two families of zeta functions which are modeled by the same matrix group, and the statistics are not the same, but they have one universal part which depends on the matrix group, and one other part which is kind of specific to the family of L functions. So I think it's not a disaster. So these have the same asymptotic growth, but the constant is different. Okay, so anyway, I would like to see this as kind of part of a, as I said, more general picture. So I'll just make a remark about some other things which might be true in this direction. So as I said, integer factorization is really about the equation xy is equal to n. Now, let's take f to be any homogeneous polynomial in k variables of degree k. Okay, so this will be the case of xy, which is two variables of degree. Okay, now it's still reasonable to expect. It's still reasonable to expect. So maybe you should perhaps assume it to be positive definite just to make this finite, or put some range constraint. But again, it's reasonable to expect that if you phrase the problem, RF of n is the number of solutions to f of x equals n with x integral. If you phrase that problem over a function field, again, you see that the fact these are equal at least suggests strongly that the dimension of the corresponding varieties are zero. So you can ask, again, will this, as you vary n, will the statistics of this as n varies, will these be modeled by, again, statistics of permutations, possibly statistics of fixed points of permutations drawn from some subgroups of... Okay, so I don't really know, but there are certainly cases where it's true. To give you a very stupid case, Well, if f is x squared plus y squared, so you write number of ways of writing an integer sum of two squares, you can certainly see many similarities between that and the group which is given by, you take the symmetric group on n letters dot z mod 2 to the n acting by permutations and sign changes on z mod 2 to the n. Okay? This is kind of a silly example, but there are at least several other interesting examples I know where the statistics of this are very far from random, and correspondingly you can match them to an interesting permutation group. That's what I'll come to last, although I don't know if I'll have time. Generically, certainly, this permutation group will be the full symmetric group, and correspondingly, the distribution of this will be Poissonian. Okay, that is like a random number. But the interesting things happen for specific polynomials, for example, if they have automorphisms. Okay, so, any questions? All right, so the fourth thing I want to talk about is, I talked about some examples. One was large symmetric groups, such as in factorization and slight variance. One was matrix groups, and so you can ask, somehow the theory would not be so interesting if that was all you got. So you can ask if there's some kind of constraint on the type of permutation groups that you might expect to appear in this picture. And the answer is, amazingly, there's kind of a very weak structural theory, you can say. So this is some structure theory, and it's, again, entirely not due to me. There's a theorem of Michael Onan and Leonard Scott in the theory of permutation groups, and also what I'm about to say uses work of Kleidman and Liebeck on some. Okay, so here's an amazing fact about permutation groups. So suppose you have some subgroup of a big symmetric group. Okay. So what I want to say is that there are not so many large permutation groups in nature. That is, if G is in some sense a large subgroup of a symmetric group and N is very large, then it's possible that the structure of G is very highly constrained. Okay, so I'll start with a simpler. So this theorem, again, I don't know who to attribute it to, but it follows from the classification of finite simple groups. If the number of orbits of G on, okay, so G, suppose G, suppose that G acts transitively not only on 1 to n, but on k tuples from 1 to n. So given, you know, any two 7 tuples, I can move one to the other. So another way of saying that is if the number of orbits of G on 1 to, is the same as the number of orbits of the full symmetric group on 1 n to the k, okay, this is very strong, but if this is true for k less than some absolute constant, I think 8 is enough, I might be wrong, then G is either the alternating group or the symmetric group. Okay, so this is an amazing consequence of that there are no finite finite groups besides the full symmetric group, which just asking that it act transitively, that it move any 8 tuple to any other 8 tuple, forces it to be the full alternating or symmetric group. Okay. That's, in a sense, not so helpful because it's extremely hard in nature to, but there is kind of a weaker version of this, which is, I would say, very crude, but it's kind of philosophically very interesting, which is that suppose you don't require the number of orbits of G on one, so we look at, say, 10 tuples, and now we don't ask that there's just one orbit, we ask there's some bounded number of orbits, okay? Now, there's still a sense in which the structure theory of G is kind of determined by that. So I'm going to give a rather imprecise statement, but you can extract the statement is imprecise. But so suppose that G has, so e.g., that you start off with a condition like G has at most, 1,000 orbits on 1 n to the k for k less than 10 or something. Okay? Then there's still kind of an approximate structure you can put on G in the following sense. So this is through the work of the people above. You can say that G is a subgroup of some G is a subgroup of G prime. And I'm going to just So Jesus, there's some where G prime is built up by simple, essentially by reef product. So I won't say what this is, but from basic groups. Okay, so what are the basic groups here? Well, they're symmetric groups and their permutation representations. They're matrix groups acting on flags, and a finite collection of other groups. Oh yeah, by the way, built up. Oh, the final thing in a bounded number of steps. Okay, so of course the classification of fine simple groups says any group is in some very mysterious sense built up out of simple groups. But here the point is the number of steps is also bounded. Now this is not as good as you want because we don't have too much information on the index of G prime in G. You have a little information, okay? This is not just, you can't just take G prime to be a full symmetric group. It gives you a better structure, but you would want this to be much closer to an equality than as follows from this general theory of Onan. So it's kind of a question whether you can develop a better sort of asymptotic structure theory for permutation groups with this under some boundedness assumption. Okay. I'm out of time. The last thing I wanted to say was the last example I wanted to give was kind of generalizing the Cohen-Lenstra heuristics to a different problem, which is concerns counting number field extensions of the rational numbers. And maybe the only thing to say there is you really see some exotic permutation groups. You get, for example, reef products of matrix groups over F2 and F3. So you get things which are kind of not at all elementary. In fact, it was kind of explained that we started thinking if there was such a structure theory. Okay.